everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Mobilecast. I'm coming to you live from our studios in Oakland, New Jersey, and we have a great show for you tonight. I'm actually sitting here through Skype with Javier Soltero, co-founder and CEO of Uncomply, and they have a new app that is out in beta for iOS, but I'm sure will be out for other platforms. And Javier, why don't you introduce yourself?
Great to be here, Brian. Thanks. This is Javier Soltero, and as you mentioned, I'm the co-founder and CEO of Uncomply, which is a new mobile app for the iPhone designed to bring a more powerful email experience for professionals.
And you guys more or less came out of stealth pretty much in the last couple of weeks when you announced your most recent funding. So we saw you, I think, was it at Launch or TechCrunch last year that you guys did a quick conversation but wouldn't say what you were doing?
We got some coverage last year because when I started the company and officially sort of we gave it a name, there was because of my prior work in the industry, I had the great privilege of being asked by many journalists what I was up to, even though we weren't able to say anything. But yeah, no, we officially launched the company and announced our funding last week on February 20th, and it's great, frankly, because it's high time that I can at least tell people what we're actually building and show them that we're building this amazing email product, whereas for the last year it's been mostly about shucking and jiving and pretending like we have no idea what they're talking about.
So let's actually talk a little bit about your history. As you said, you're well known. I know you because you co-founded Hyperic,
yep,
which was a cloud management platform, which I guess was bought by SpringSource and then acquired by VMware. Long story short.
Yeah, that's sort of the abridged version. The company was started in 2004, and we had a great run. We built an amazing business with thousands of customers, and we were lucky enough to help manage some of the very largest cloud and software as a service environments out there. And then in 2009, we merged with SpringSource, and literally like 90 days later, both companies were acquired by VMware. So it was an interesting year for us for sure. And then immediately after that, I spent 3.5 years at VMware as a CTO of software as a service and application services. And, formulated a lot of the strong opinions that I had that ultimately led to Uncomply while I was there.
Excellent, because that's where we're going to go next. But before we do that, Hyperic was, founded around open source. And, you have a history with that.
I do, yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about your opinions there and, especially being the, CTO of SaaS over at VMware.
So open source, at the time that I first became aware, just for perspective for your listeners, and this is going to sound ridiculously geeky, but whatever, I installed the first version of Linux that I ever touched on floppy disks back in 1993. I've been in one form or another involved with open source for quite some time. And when we got to, I started my career in Wall Street and then went to Netscape. And after Netscape, I worked on a variety of startups that in the early days of the web were mostly built on then nascent open source technologies, things like Apache, etc. And so by the time we got to Hyperic, I had become an active contributor in a number of projects, mostly around the then sort of very early Java ecosystem of Apache projects, which has now become, it used to be a separate thing called Jakarta, and now it's just Apache projects that are Java-based, and arguably more of the Apache stuff is built on Java than not. And when it came to building Hyperic, obviously we built Hyperic using a whole bunch of different open-source technologies for the infrastructure piece, and as part of that, I was a contributor to JBoss and Tomcat and a lot of other relevant technologies for Hyperic. And what we found was there was this very, very important opportunity to help people manage stuff that was built with all this open software infrastructure. And so ultimately we built a product on open source technology that was designed to manage open source technology. And 2 or so years after we founded the company, we ended up open sourcing Hyperic itself, which I'm happy to report is still the case, and it's a thriving open source project that VMware now maintains. It was a really, you know, back then open source, not only as a way of developing software, but as a business model, was a very interesting thing. And we were able to be one of the early players in that and formulated a lot of the, we proved a lot of the concepts behind that kind of business model, I guess.
And part of what's actually interesting about that whole thing is Hyperic was a way to manage all this open source stuff that didn't all play well together. Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah. In fact, it turns out that where we made most of our early revenue was because we were OEM'd by both JBoss and MySQL as their management platform of choice. So when you paid JBoss or MySQL money, essentially, in addition to support, what you got was this management console that was basically built on top of Hyperic. So we became the management platform for all the successful open source projects, and we became essentially the revenue, the core subscription revenue source for a lot of these companies as well.
So I'm going to guess that the fact that you figured out a way to make all this complicated stuff easier has a little bit to do with how you ended up creating a company with your co-founders.
That is definitely the case.
So why don't you tell us, you know, how you went from CTO of SaaS projects and all at VMware, and I know you were an entrepreneur in residence as well. I think it was at Redvolt. I apologize.
Redpoint. Yes,
Redpoint.
That's where I went right after I left VMware for a brief period of time, and that's ultimately where we got started. So the best way to summarize it is obviously tons of experience in infrastructure, and if you want to put it in sort of layman's terms, you could say that I've got a lot of plumbing in my background. I'm somewhat of a master plumber in some ways when it comes to at least internet technologies and infrastructure in particular. And while I was at VMware, obviously get to work, it's sort of a crowning achievement for somebody who's got a passion for infrastructure to ultimately be a part of a company that has had such a significant impact in how people deal with infrastructure, how they consume it, and how they build next-generation data centers and everything else. And to have Hyperic have played an important part of that was great. As my days there, you know, evolved, I started developing stronger opinions around what I thought were really bigger picture problems, not the least of which was the fact that IT today is just overwhelmed with the number of technologies that are being thrown at them. And as part of that, anybody who's starting a company today, if your route to market and to success involves you twisting arms inside of an IT department, no matter how disruptive your product may be, you need to realize that IT professionals are busy doing IT things, and so their bandwidth and their openness to go looking for new solutions and evaluate the flood of new platform technologies, management technologies, etc., is pretty limited. So I left VMware with a pretty strong opinion that said whatever the next company I build is, it can't be just an infrastructure-centric product because, well, I just don't know that IT 3 to 5 years from now is going to start making buying decisions based on, IT-led initiatives, and there's going to be a lot more interested in fulfilling user interest and user demand, and really it's going to be users, people like you and me, that are going to start the ball rolling by choosing certain technologies that help them get the job done, and then IT shifts into much more of an enablement kind of role rather than the sort of arbiter of choice, which for the most part they are today.
Sounds like you've been reading my blog post there.
Well, I've read a lot of them, and I have. We're getting into the strong opinion section of our conversation here, Brian. So I can't wait. I'd like to think that we're going to disagree on a bunch of stuff to make this interesting for your listeners, but I'm not sure. We'll see.
I'm happy to disagree, as my listeners will tell you.
Okay.
You started, and when you first got covered, months and months ago, you said, "Look, we're not going to tell you what we're doing, but we're going to make things in the enterprise easier."
Right. Yeah.
What made you choose Mail, other than the fact that you knew the guys from Zimbra?
That is a great question. So the reason why we chose Mail, you could almost say that I reluctantly chose Mail. What I really was investigating when I was at Redpoint, right around this time last year, where my head was at was basically we we live in a world now where instead of having, you know, your employer basically give you all the technology that you need to do work with, which was the case certainly for the last 20 or 30 years, you need a computer, here's your computer, you need a phone, here's your phone, etc. We now live in a world where you bring technology to the workplace. You bring devices, more importantly, you bring applications and services and so forth. And those things ultimately end up getting mixed up with whatever sort of technology your company is still responsible for providing you, which is, by the way, a different set of things than what they were providing you even 10 years ago. As a result, being that I am really honed in into sort of the management software world, the first thing I notice is that things tend to break pretty spectacularly when you have this kind of collision course of personal IT and sort of traditional corporate IT. The boundary of responsibility is blurred. If it's my iPhone and it breaks, I don't take it to my IT department to have them fix it. I have to take it to the Apple store, right? If I chose to use, let's say it's Evernote, and I use Evernote to take notes that I, you know, use for work, but for whatever reason I can't find a note or some other aspect of it isn't working for me, I can't go to my IT shop and say, hey, by the way, this app that you're not paying for and that you don't even know I'm using is not working for me. You have to go get that sorted out yourself.
Yeah, so I would agree. We're in an era of self-service that, yep. You know, and let's be fair here. Most corporations aren't necessarily ready for that self-service mindset.
Agree completely.
And partially it's because some of the things that, you know, people like you and me decide to use may not be secure, may be other issues, and wait a second, the IT department owns it. And, you know, I've always been a big believer that the IT shouldn't be the department of no, they should be the department of KNOW.
Yeah.
We know how to do this, we know how to enable you.
Yeah, so I agree with that, and in fact, part of what I was trying to figure out was, okay, so the line, this hasn't been sorted out, but when you start a company, it's important to have a time horizon that is longer than the here and now, right? Like, building companies, great companies, takes a lot of time. Hyperic, for example, what took, five plus years to get itself built out and to get the product to where it needed to be and get into the level of customer traction that earned us the success we had. And so similarly, if you're starting a company in, you know, February of 2013, you have to say, well, what is going to be the state of the world in, you know, 3 to 5 years from now? And the answer to that is absolutely, you know, we're going to have a mix of corporate and personal provided technology, and in that mix, you know, new opportunities emerge as part of the breakage that occurs there. That's natural. So I started thinking, it's actually a very grounded experience. I installed an app that I had some interest in, and as part of installing that app on my phone, it asked me for the ability to connect to a whole range of other things, Dropbox and my Gmail, and it basically through OAuth was asking for a lot of connectivity and integration. And I had spent quite a bit of time looking at SaaS integration while I was at VMware, so I was fascinated by the idea that now the task of allowing applications to talk to each other was no longer a IT-led thing, but it was actually an end-user thing where you could decide, yep, I want to use, you know, I want this app to go look at my Evernote notes or have access to this data, or I want to use this identity to gain access to this service. And so as a result, what immediately hit me was, well, if this app, which, by the way, it turned out the app was not great. So once I uninstall this app, going about revoking those permissions is quite a painful thing. And most users will assume incorrectly, because they've got better things to do with their life, they'll assume incorrectly that by uninstalling the app from their phone, they're essentially revoking the integration rights that they may have given that app. And that's not the case, right?
Absolutely. You have to go to the service and revoke them yourselves. I actually thought that I use Buffer. I do a tweet chat, and they're about the only tweets that I schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And when Buffer got attacked recently, you know, it looked like my Twitter had been compromised, and I had to go in and I had to revoke everything and go through that. It's not a fun process.
It's not. Yeah.
So what's so broken about mail? And I actually have my own feeling about that, but again, what made you choose Mail? What's so broken about
Mail? So the reason we got to Mail was we basically concluded that all the problems that I think need to be solved in this world of sort of a shared responsibility between individuals and their, you know, supporting IT departments, all those problems, you know, end up converging around a single technology, which is basically email. Email is the only bridge across that divide between your stuff and your employer's stuff. And it happens to be the primary, the most tangible source of identity for a end user is their email address. I mean, it's a lot more complicated than that in terms of how it works under the hood, but when you talk about how do you contact me through my email address. How do I actually authenticate myself into a range of applications and services? I use my email address. And so we sort of backed our way into the fact that email has this very strategic role at the very center of that divide where we think all these amazingly awesome new opportunities are going to show up. And then we said, okay, so it looks like in order to build this company, the company that is born in the middle, in the chaotic middle between the sort of high-end enterprise software world and the purely consumer-led damn the torpedoes, what do you mean IT, this, that, or the other, is basically an email company. And so after that, we said, well, okay, what is broken with email? What gives us the right? Email's been around for a long time. What could possibly be broken or worth solving around a technology as ubiquitous as email? And naturally, the answer is, well, it's certainly mobile experience on email is far from perfect. But more importantly, part of what makes people shy away from email, which we see as a huge opportunity, is the broad range of habits that people have when they use email is part of what makes it hard to build an email product that is truly different than simply, well, basically what you see from mail.app today inside of the iPhone, right?
Yeah, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, I've had different habits depending upon my system. You know, I used to keep everything in my inbox. I don't remember the last time I saw inbox zero.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I look at it more as read new messages zero versus inbox zero. You know, and how that integrates with calendar, tasks, you know, all that. It's a problem. So let's actually talk about what Acompli is and what it does. So
Acompli is built around a very simple idea, and that is basically that you read more email than you do email on your phone. And as a professional, because email remains the most important communication tool that you have at your disposal, your ability to do more email from your phone is directly related to your ability to make progress at work and be more successful. So you say, okay, well, why is that? Why do we not do enough email from the phone? What is holding us back? And actually, I'll turn the question to you and say, you know, what are three very sort of grounded and easy to think of reasons that hold you back from doing more email from your phone, Brian? Let's play this game.
Sure. Long messages are difficult to read.
Okay.
It's not necessarily fair for me completely because A, I have Acompli, and B, I use a bunch of different devices being what I do at work. But, you know, long messages are definitely difficult to read. They're not formatted well.
Mm-hmm.
Doing calendaring and sending invitations is extremely difficult. And, you know, God forbid you have a threaded messages that you're going back and forth, really tough to follow and figure out where you are and save stuff for later.
Yeah. So the way we answer that question, and your answer is actually very much in line with what we're doing, but the way we thought about it from a very mechanical point of view, we talked about, and this is where my co-founders being involved in email for so long is so helpful. We thought about things in terms of the core workflows that you follow when you're doing email, right? Everything from triaging messages and deciding what you're deleting or archiving or filing or whatever to actually responding, et cetera. And we found three very, very straightforward things that whether you're an inbox zero person or an inbox 50,000 person, you would agree are reasons that hold you back from doing more mail from your phone. Number one, composing anything but the most basic message on your phone is painful. The lack of a physical keyboard plus a whole range of other things about how email is implemented on the phone pretty much leave you with a very limited ability to compose anything but often short apologetic messages that are signed with a, hey, sent from my phone, and sorry for the brevity and the typos and the this and the that. So that's the first one. The second, because your email is your sort of personal, it's the knowledge store for most professionals, and arguably even for you on your personal life. Like what's in your email is kind of your brain in a lot of ways. Your ability to find things quickly and easily inside of that knowledge base is very, very, very difficult on the phone. The phone doesn't have a full data set. It's, you know, search functionality exposes you to the divide between what's on the device and what's on the server. It has no concept of folders. It's really just very rudimentary. And most importantly, it still requires tons of typing. And the third one, and this is arguably the hardest one because it's kind of counter to one of the design virtues of mobile apps, is this idea that app switching is painful. Most of the things that you get in email tend to be things that require you to take action elsewhere or look up information elsewhere. So the often the reaction to receiving an email and reading it on your phone is actually leaving the email client and launching the calendar, or leaving the email client and going into some other app to find or do whatever it is that you need to do, only to then have to go back to email and sort of consider the task complete. While that sort of one app, one purpose thing is a huge virtue for most mobile apps, it turns out that email is a very special case in that it's kind of a gateway app. It's an app that leads to actions in other apps, and in iOS specifically, that is extraordinarily difficult. Take for example, the task of attaching a picture to an email message in iOS. Well, Apple believes that the right process to do that is for you to go to the Photos app and select the picture and then choose to email it, whereas most people are sort of trained, for better or for worse, to start from an email message and then look to attach things into it. Further, anything beyond Photos and you're out of luck when it comes to Apple and its ability to attach stuff into the messages. So with those three things in mind, the sort of, you know, composing is hard, finding things is hard, and app switching is hard, we said, what's the answer? And the answer is to build an app that is a beautiful, familiar email experience, but that has you at all times no more than one gesture away from relevant content or actions that you need to do in order to deal with that message. And that's what we've built with Acompa.
Okay, so I want to hold that thought for a minute because you're talking about UX, and that's actually my next question. But let's actually talk a little bit about the app, and then because really, Acompli is two pieces. It's the app and it's the back end.
That's right.
And so let's start with the app. It is a beautiful app. It's in beta right now. You can, you know, for all the listeners, you can actually sign up for the app at Acompli's website, get an invitation, work it through that way.
Yep.
It allows, you know, and I've had it for 24 hours, allows you to deal with Gmail, allows you to deal with Exchange, everything else. It has calendars, has contacts, although it calls them people, and you have a choice of looking at stuff when all accounts or not. And to be clear, this is beta, folks, so there are going to be pieces that are missing. And it has something called Files, which is a little bit different than what you see other places. So I want to start with, let's talk about Files for a second.
Sure.
Tell me about it.
Why is Files in there? Well, when we went from this kind of high-level concept of having everything be no more than one gesture away from you being able to act on things, we thought of the three most important types of data that you deal with from your email are your calendar data, so events, meetings, schedules, etc., the files that you send and receive, and the people that you interact with. And so if you look at Acompli today, there are specific sections of the app dedicated to providing a different kind of view into each of those three things. With Files, there's a bunch of email apps out there today that would allow you to attach messages from Dropbox, for example, or from Box, or any number of other sort of online storage services. That's really, if that was the missing piece of the puzzle, then other apps would have pretty much rung the bell on this opportunity and basically walked away with all the users.
And you could argue that that's why Dropbox bought Mailbox.
That is most certainly why Dropbox bought Mailbox, is they believe that Dropbox needed a better way of people actually sharing files directly from email, which is really the conduit through which files are often shared. So because email is the conduit through which files are shared, and because despite the spectacular success of Dropbox, in the professional world, most business is transacted via attachments and attached files that are sent or received by various users, the first thing we said was we need to provide, you know, we had people tell us all the time, hey, finding an attachment is really hard. It's a real painful experience to go and search for, you know, the PowerPoint presentation that Brian Katz sent me last week. That was the second revision about the project that we're doing over here. So we said, well, typing is hard. Search is broken. How do we make it so that you can see the files that you've sent and received and use the benefit of gesture-based navigation and the phone's kind of inherent interface to see a time-ordered view into any file that you've sent and received? You're almost turning your mailbox inside out and say, show me from a files first kind of view, and say, here's the file and here's the person who sent it to you and the subject of the message that it came from. And then not only be able to view the file, but more importantly, be able to share the file forward without having to kind of separate it manually and from the message body that originally encapsulated it. Or alternatively, if you need to actually, if you remember the file, but you needed to see the context that was actually in the email message itself, be able to go from the file to the original message and, you know, find whatever kind of information you're looking for. So that's the basics of the design there. You certainly can expect us to add other sources of file data over time, but the general design is very much built on this idea of the very important element of things you've sent or received, regardless of how they've been sent or received, and make sure that you lay them out in sort of a temporal order, which is the way that people are used to seeing things when it comes to email.
And to the listeners, I'm going to tell you that it actually does work well. I am very pleasantly surprised with the app and happy with it. But, you know, let's address the one thing that one of the things you said, one of the problems was typing messages.
Yep.
You know, they tend to be short messages and everything else. How do you how do you solve that part of it?
Well, you solve it. There's the general theme of this is, can you assemble messages using the interface mechanics of the phone? Can you build messages that are relevant and useful that don't require you to type? And you start kind of peeling the onion and looking into that and thinking through different. We looked at a whole variety of mailbox usage patterns, and we talked to a lot of people, and we found, for example, one of the very first things we discovered is, well, scheduling meetings is a very painful process. When you receive an email, which I guarantee you, Brian, you have at least one of those right now, that says, hey, Javier, when can you schedule a time to join me on our podcast? If I see that message on my phone prior to having a Compli, I would say, well, I'd love to reply to this message right now, Brian, but the reality is that if I were to count the number of things I have to do in order to reply to this message, not the least of which is typing a lot, I still have to basically leave the email app, go to the calendar, look through the calendar, remember mentally a series of time slots, go back to the email app, hit reply, and then start typing a whole bunch of stuff. Instead, if you haven't seen that already in a Compli,
I have seen it. And I'm going to tell people, so you go to
how you do it. Yeah, tell it. You tell them how you do it.
I click compose an email, and then there's a little calendar icon on the bottom of the email. You click it, you push it, and then you have a choice of send availability or create invite. And when you click send availability, it brings up your calendar. And you're still within the app. You click done, and you can send your message off. I will also say that there's a very nice way to do attachments, which hits right where you're talking about.
Yep.
You can choose from your library, choose from your files, or take a photo right then and there. All nice things to do. So I'm suitably impressed. I mean, I think there are pieces missing. You know, we talked about some of them. It is a beta, you know, beforehand. It is a beta app. You know, there are pieces that I'm positive you're going to be adding. And it is an iPhone-only app at the moment. Doesn't work on the iPad. And I'm hoping you have an iPad idea in mind.
Yep.
So that'll work. And I'm and you know, having looked at your jobs profile as a, you know, in preparation for talking, I know you're hiring some Android people, so I'm assuming you're looking to bring this to Android as well.
We have Android people on staff and are looking for more, so if any of your listeners are amazing Android developers, we certainly are eager to talk to them. It turns out, as most people know nowadays, there's a lot of demand for mobile developer talent. You know, we've talked to a bunch of people. We feel we have a very special thing that we're building here, and we have we've built an amazing team of technologists. So we're eager to hear from any of your listeners that think that they have what it takes to come help build an app that we expect millions of users to fall in love with, and help us build not only the Android app but also things beyond it. I mean, we're not, you know, we're launching on iPhone first because that's where we chose to start, but we fully expect to have a multi-platform strategy, and you know, we'll you'll see a lot more of this over the coming months.
Absolutely, and we will include the website for Acompli in the show notes. So that's the front end. Let's talk about the back end, where a bunch of the magic also happens.
That's right. So where do you want me to start?
The beginning.
Okay. So, you know, we have a back-end service, not because we're back-end people and we just really like building back-end services, but because in order to fulfill the functionality that we envision, the user experience that you've been enjoying for the last day, we realized that you needed to be able to basically free yourself from the standard email protocols that govern the way that apps interact with email servers directly. More importantly, there is only finite processing and data capacity on the phone, so you need a place to be able to do the kind of indexing work and sort of content acceleration work that we do in our back end. And then you need to be able to do that in such a way that when you talk to IT professionals, like I'm sure the many listeners of your podcast are, that you can explain what that particular, you know, design is what that service layer is actually responsible for doing.
So let's actually start there, because okay. I have a question that I'm sure you get asked by anybody who's in the enterprise. But so in some ways, you kind of act as a proxy for my email.
That's right.
Whether it's Gmail or Exchange.
That's right.
And you said you do indexing, so at least you know about the email that's in my box and
yep.
apparently the attachments.
Yep.
How much of that stuff is actually stored up in your cloud?
So we have pieces of your mailbox at any given time that is stored in our cloud. When it comes to attachments, we only actually pull down attachments that are requested by the user when they wanted to actually download them to the device. Otherwise, they stay in the host server. The design is meant to have the Exchange server or Gmail or whatever the host server actually is continue to be the system of record and the source of authority and truth for email, and it's the source of data governance, etc. What we have is essentially, you can think of it as basically a cache that is there in part to help not only provide the indexing capability that we do, but also do the kind of acceleration of delivery that we do down to the device. I'm curious if you've noticed a difference in speed from the way in which Acompli delivers messages, say, relative to other apps that you may have used in the past, both from Google or even the built-in email client.
Well, I guess that'll be my next question. Is it, so I have my Gmail, for example, when I upgraded to my iPhone 7, I lost mm-hmm. the ability to use Exchange with and use push with Gmail.
Yep.
Apparently, it seems with Acompli, I've gained it back because of
yes,
how you do
it. Yes, you sure have. Yes, you sure have. And we're doing that as part of the design is essentially our proxy is a in the case of Gmail an IMAP client, a secure IMAP client. In the case of Exchange, a secure Active Sync client that is acting on your behalf. To basically relay messages down to the server. And part of why we're able to do this so much faster is IMAP and ActiveSync, and especially IMAP, are really sort of chatty, uncompressed, not very sync-aware protocols. Even ActiveSync is intrinsically sync-aware, but it's very inefficient in the way in which it figures out what the delta between the current state of the mailbox is and the state that it is in, down in the client. So we've sort of turned that all inside out, and we have a model through which we're able to deliver messages down to the device in a much more in a way that is optimized for the device's current state, meaning the state of the mailbox as represented in the app, and more importantly, the connectivity and data speed of the device as well. So we are able to think of like one message as a series of chunks, and we can optimize the chunking of that message down to the device in a way that is going to make the best use of the bandwidth that the device currently has, whereas both ActiveSync and IMAP would just sit there and say, okay, I got to go establish a secure connection, and then I got to go do the series of calls, and then I got to go figure out what I have versus what I don't have, and play back a series of sync operations. Our product doesn't work that way. Our sort of sync state is done in basically in one pass. A great way to experience this, for example, is to go and do a bunch of changes on your Gmail or even in your Outlook, and then fire up Acompli, and you'll see that within seconds, any moves or any deletes or whatever, pop, get reflected immediately in the app in a way that in Mail.app or in any other client, you'd basically sit there and wait for a while it gets itself sorted out.
Okay, so I have two questions. The first one will be more of a client question.
Mm-hmm.
What's that do to battery life on the phone?
So far in our testing, the only people who have flagged battery life issues for us have been people that are on iPhone 4s running iOS 7. The iPhone 4, as you know, is a lower power device, so not even a 4S, so a 4. And that because we're doing push notifications, which of course the user can disable, and background fetches based on those push notifications, that the battery life and processing power of the 4 tends to struggle. In general, you know, as a person who's got three versions of Acompli running on their iPhone 5 at any given point in time, I can make it through a whole day without any difficulty. One of the things we'll do before the app goes live on the store is, of course, go through a even more thorough battery life review. But if you see the work we've done from a testing perspective to do offline testing, we're sending emails while riding underground subways, we're sending emails in low coverage areas, inside concrete bunkers, we're deleting things. I mean, we've done extensive testing to make sure that at all times email is a fundamentally trust-driven application, and if you mess with that trust, whether it's by not securing the data correctly, which we pay a tremendous amount of attention to, or by in any way confusing the user and suggesting that email delivery is not happening the way that it should, or very importantly, and this goes to a few of the other clients out there that do things that don't sort of play nice with others, if you do things in a user's mailbox that lead them to a confused state when they access email from any other client, whether it's Outlook or the web version of Gmail or frankly any other mail app, and you, for the sake of some specific feature, have gone and buried a bunch of messages in a special folder, or you've created a secret folder that's where you stash things that are meant to be shown back later or whatever, those kind of things, professionals simply, professional email users that are not technocrats, that are not sort of tech-oriented people that are here in Silicon Valley, are not fond of checking their email in two places and seeing two different things. So, and I assume you and your listeners are probably in that camp as well.
No, fully understand, but you hit on something which was really my next question. You know, coming from the enterprise view,
mm-hmm. You
mentioned trust, and I'm going to ask you security because, you're a caching thing, and,
yep.
My day job, I work for a company that's regulated. We're in healthcare.
Yep.
And, how do I get this past my security person?
Well, the first thing is we're using Exchange ActiveSync. So the way we're connecting into the mail server in the case of Exchange is exactly the same way that your Mail.app or any other sort of sanctioned client would be connecting.
I'm all okay with that. The connection's fine, but the data's passing through you,
right,
and you cache some. So
yep.
What does that mean? The questions I'm going to get is, number one, does that mean that law enforcement can come to you? What's that mean for if there's HIPAA-compliant data that probably shouldn't be in my email anyway, but if there's data that I want to protect, what's that mean for going through you?
So from our perspective, we haven't officially, because the product is not in GA yet, we haven't sort of formally rolled out our privacy policy. I'm happy to give you sort of the highlights of how we're thinking through the problem. But before I do that, I'll make it abundantly clear for you and your listeners that not only are we architecting a system that's designed with security and privacy and data reliability in mind, but we happen to have a team of people that have been doing this for the better part of, you know, more than 10 years, and whose technology today is in use in those same regulated environments on the order of tens of millions of mailboxes that are supported by Zimbra and OpenWave and all the technologies that my co-founders and our engineers helped build. So we're very familiar with how to build secure mail stores, and we've designed a cloud service that has security in mind at every layer. So we've invested heavily in penetration testing, third-party security audits, and a whole range of things to make sure that when it comes to having that conversation with your IT department, we can say, okay, let's start first from the fact that the users of this product love it and that we are solving the right problem and delivering the functionality that empowers them and makes them happier. Next, when it comes to how we're handling your data, we'll be very, very specific about where the data is being stored, what data we're storing and why, and certainly giving from day one the ability for IT IT administrators to enforce the same level of policy that they've been enforcing with any mobile client directly on that Acompli user population. And these are the things that, in our view, separate us from other small companies that are interested in doing things in email that are sort of waving their hand, I guess, at the immense responsibility of transacting in this kind of data. In fact, the commercial opportunity around Acompli and the service we ultimately expect to build is designed to specifically offer the IT department that is supporting a population of Acompli-loving, crazy people like you and me the ability to have extraordinary visibility, management, and analytics into the data that's flowing through our services, not just for the sake of security, but frankly because it's really important to be able to understand, how much is actually happening when it comes to mobile email. So we're very, very excited about that.
No, it makes sense. And, you've jumped to another question, so we'll go right to it. Acompli is free to the end user. So when you go public, when it ends up in the App Store, mm-hmm. anybody is going to be able to download it. Anybody's going to be able to use it. How are you going to make money? And you started talking about that. You're building a service.
So our goal is to build a set of management and analytics tools that are part of our back-end service that will allow the IT administrators that support these users the ability to get visibility and manageability into that user population, similar to other, current management tools for mobile email from the likes of BlackBerry. I know you covered the BlackBerry platform announcement. You're obviously very familiar with Bez, similarly Good, and a range of others. The issue that I have, that we as a company have with these companies that are doing secure mobile email for enterprises, is frankly that they're building client products, apps, that don't pass a very simple test, and that is that if I were to put any user in front of our app and any other app that is otherwise sanctioned by IT, and you say, barring any other sort of concern from IT, which one would you really want to use and which one is going to make you more successful, and they're going to choose Acompli, or at least that is our design point. We're not doing an IT-first kind of a go-to-market strategy.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, and I'm going to simplify it, and you can say, hey, don't say that, but what you're really doing is, let's get Acompli out to everybody, and there's going to be so many people using it that IT is just going to have to come to us anyway.
Well, that's true, and I think, listen, that's exactly how it's supposed to work. But the thing that makes us different, right, and the thing that, if you go back again to that idea of the spectrum between purely consumer-oriented companies and otherwise sort of capital E enterprise software companies that only deal with IT and rarely have direct concerns for the end user and rarely subject themselves to that level of scrutiny that says, would you choose my product even if your IT administrator didn't force you to use it, is that we know we're sort of equal parts infrastructure and IT-focused people as well as builders of beautiful things.
I'll make it easier for you. Yeah. You're building a consumer product from the enterprise model.
There you go.
And you know, there is something to be said about that. You know, one of the issues that people have had, you know, Dropbox is trying to turn their product into an enterprise model. You know, the same thing with Evernote. Evernote's added a bunch of stuff to work with the enterprise. And, you know, you have an advantage that you have that in mind.
Yep.
As you're starting, which certainly puts you at the head of the game, assuming your app does as well as I would think it might. So I want to step back to what we were about 20 minutes ago when we started talking to you. UX is important. And, you know, UX, user experience, I'm a huge believer in it. And, you know, if the UX fails, you have a crap application. And I talk about them all the time. I talk about them when I blog. I talk about them when I speak. Everything. How do you and your team build the right UX? You know, what do you go through? What's the process?
So the process is, it starts with acknowledging that people are familiar with what an email client is supposed to look like, and nobody's asking for a complete reimagination of a list of messages and individual message rendering. What they are asking for is this kind of concept of being closer to relevant data and actions that help them get things done. And so to that end, we have a very simple rule, which is we measure every single gesture or action that is required to do a specific task, whether it's deleting or archiving a message or moving it to a folder or marking it as unread or flagging it or searching for an item or booking a calendar event or responding to a calendar invite, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we simply count them. And so we have this gnarly spreadsheet where we've looked at every client out there, all the major ones anyway, including some of the enterprise ones, and we've counted. It's sort of like, if you remember, or maybe your listeners remember that old commercial from the 80s or maybe even the 70s of how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop. It's like, how many licks does it take to get this email actually out of my inbox and fully processed?
So that's a great approach.
Yep.
I tend to, you know, it sounds to me, and the term that I've been using for a while and that I've coined is the fun principle. You're focusing on the user need,
yep.
Which is, how do I get something done and be productive and efficient wherever I am? How do I do this quickly? How do I get my stuff out there?
That's very much the idea. And the one other thing we'd add to that is, because the mobile professional is busy and often on the move, can you do that particular action, whatever it is that we're envisioning, with one hand and the phone 3 feet away from your face? And that's the where, especially for, you know, a guy like me who wears glasses, we get into a more interesting territory.
I will say, the first time I opened an email on a Confly yesterday, it was very nice to see the larger font and the better readability with it.
Yep.
So how many user experience people do you have on your team?
We have, I think, 2 or 3.
And with that, obviously they're talking and, you know, they're measuring these things and all. But, you know, one of the concepts is, how do you get that user experience training out to your developers who probably aren't experienced as much with that?
Well, we the way we do development here is basically much more, we all sit together, so the there isn't sort of this formal separation between the back end and app teams. We tend to do things in a much more we look at the end-to-end picture and we say, okay, well, what is it going to take? This week we need to implement, for example, the ability to forward and edit calendar events, which is not in the product yet, right? We have calendar event creation, we have scheduling management and a whole range of things, but in the grand sort of difficult pot of evil things that is implementing anything related to calendar, the forwarding and editing of events is next up for this week. So that is a part UX conversation, part app implementation conversation. We work our way from the app inwards into the server, and that frees us, frankly, from being able to, if you're looking at working your way back from the Exchange server, the chances are you're going to implement something that may not look right, because you're going to expose the user to a interaction model that is mostly built around the way the protocol was designed and not necessarily built around the way the user is expecting to do things. And that's, I think, the fundamental difference.
And I'm going to ask for one request. I'm going to ask for it publicly right here on the Mobilecast as opposed to afterwards, which is, please handle recurring appointments well. I have yet to find a good client that does that.
Awesome that you say that, and I will make sure to carry that message over to the engineers on our team that when I first mentioned that we were going to end up implementing a calendar inside of the app, they were like, oh, no, man. And I'm like, what? What's so hard about that? And they were like, dude, recurrence is a nightmare. Please, can we do something else, anything other than calendar? And the reason why our lead engineer who has the responsibility and some say the curse of being responsible for, you know, the back end implementation of our calendar APIs is intimately familiar with the nightmare of recurrence. It's something that most apps don't get right. So believe me, I'm curious to get your thoughts on how we do it today, and certainly we from everything from scheduling to conflict detection to availability, et cetera, all of that needs to take recurrence into account, and that is very, very hard.
It's a pet peeve of mine because I will not delete recurring appointments from my phone, because if I delete them from my phone for whatever reason, it never deletes correctly from Exchange, and I think I have meetings that I don't, or I have meetings that I do that were changed, and it just drives me nuts. And I'm sure it drives many of my listeners nuts. So that would be my only request for you. So let's switch gears a little bit, because we're running long, and I don't want to keep you too long. But this has been actually – by the way, we haven't really disagreed yet. So.
No, exactly. Yeah, we haven't disagreed yet.
Okay. Well, being a big open source guy, how's a company play into that vision?
You know, we're still thinking through that. I'd love to think – we've built an amazing amount of technology, and we're obviously big consumers of open source. I think it's pretty safe to say that we will, much like Twitter and Facebook and a lot of other successful companies have open source technology as they've grown, we're very eager to contribute to that. And to the extent that it's relevant to have people leveraging open source libraries that are created by us, you should certainly expect to see that from us. I think at this point, because things are so early and we're developing the technology, you know, that we're expecting to use, it's hard to make a strong case for starting to throw code over the wall and say, hey, look at all this stuff. Like, we have a high bar for what it takes to do that. But, coming from Zimbra and Hyperic and companies that have contributed a tremendous amount of code out into the open source world, you can certainly expect us to do the same.
Excellent. It's good to see that you still keep that, you know, that integral part of you as part of the company.
It's important. It's important. And it's something that it's the difference between you being sort of purely a consumer of other people's work as well as contributing, right? And we've contributed patches to a range of things that we use today, even before we've released our own set of things.
Okay. So let's try and get to the last question, because I only have one more, at least written in front of me. But, you know, when I talk about craft applications and all, one of the things I do is I talk about, a focused app, what's the problem you're trying to solve, and, you know, I rail against monolithic applications. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, as much as I'd like to call yours a monolithic application, it's not. You do a great job, to be honest, with the switching and everything else. It doesn't feel like I have this giant thing with 100 buttons on it. So, first of all, I'm going to commend you on that. But I guess the question is, what's the long-range vision for Accompli? Is it a single app? Do you have other apps that you envision? Not that you'll ever finish this app, because you'll support this forever, because that's what happens when you get involved with email. But, you know, are there more big problems to solve once you get past email?
Well, there's definitely big problems to solve, and certainly from the IT perspective, you know, there will be, I think, the state of the art when it comes to management of mobile users and mobile applications is pretty poor and is still built around a very control-oriented mentality. So I think that aside from the Accompli mobile app, you should expect to see a lot of innovation and new things that are going to come up in terms of how people interact with our service. I think as far as the mobile app itself, we're very focused at the moment on making sure that the core experience is right. And we see, I'll leave you with this thought. the answer to producing the thing that's been missing in mobile email all this time isn't simply to shrink Outlook and make it fit on a small, flat phone, right?
Absolutely not.
Arguably, Microsoft already tried to do that, and I encourage other people to go check that out. In particular, their iOS version is, it's not exactly a statement in terms of their engineering ability and their prowess in mobile development. So the answer to building the mobile email app that professionals in particular are demanding is to go and figure out how you can build a fast, secure, productive mobile email application that uses the things that are specific to the phone. Navigational elements, gestures, etc., location awareness, a lot of the context and additional signals that the phone has that your computer does not have, to build a different kind of email experience. That's the goal for us, and I'm confident it's going to take a considerable amount of time to get that right and to make sure that you prove that you've built the right thing, not because you went to a bunch of IT shops and convinced them, but because you convinced their users first and that the IT folks are coming to you saying, hey, this is a serious app. I get it. You guys are, you're loved by users and trusted by IT, which is kind of the way we think about it. How do we get more out of this app? How do we make sure this plays nicely with our environment, et cetera? So that's where we're headed.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. Bring your own app is a huge thing, and it's here to stay for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Last short question.
Sure.
Long-range plans. You guys, I know you just raised funding. How soon do you actually expect to come out of beta? And, is this, I'm going to assume, being that you've built and you've sold before, though, that this is something you actually want to get pretty big before you want to sell, but I figured I'd ask.
Well, so to answer the first question, the app should be in the App Store early Q2, so we're not too far away from that. Certainly encourage all your listeners to go to our website and sign up to get an invite. Second, in terms of where we expect to take this business, we certainly are excited and just getting started here. So we're and really just eager to prove that we can build a different kind of enterprise software company, one that is built around products that people voluntarily choose and love, and that at the same time is able to play by a set of rules that are consistent with the principles and charters of the IT departments of the world. So,
thank you, Javier. I appreciate you actually gave me more time than I think you were supposed to, but I appreciate you being on the MobileCast. This has actually been a lot of fun.
It's my pleasure, Brian. It's been great talking to you.
And we will have you again, because I think we can bring you on for some other conversations and maybe a panel or two one of these days. But folks, that's the end of this edition of the MobileCast. It's been great. If you have comments, suggestions, you can hit us up on Twitter. We have a new website coming out soon. We will have our own queue for the podcast quite soon as well. But look for us, and this should be out in the next couple days.